Psalm 37. Again, let me thank Richard for taking the class. And the emphasis that he placed on the Hebrew alphabet was quite interesting. I appreciate the work that he did on that. I want to read, I have on the board, verses 1 through 9, the security of those who trust in the Lord. Verse 9 is going to be somewhat of a transition verse, so we'll use it for that. And our emphasis this morning is going to primarily be on verse 8. But I want to read verses 1 through 9, Psalm 37. Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against them that work unrighteousness, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass, and wither as the green herb. Trust in Jehovah and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Delight thyself also in Jehovah, and he will give thee the desires of thy heart. Commit thy way unto Jehovah. Trust also in him, and he will bring it to pass. And he will make thy righteousness to go forth as the light, and thy justice as the noonday. Rest in Jehovah, and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself, it tendeth only to evil doing. For evil doers shall be cut off, but those that wait for Jehovah, they shall inherit the land. Now that sounds like a real simple passage, and in many respects it really is. It describes the security for those who trust in the Lord. In previous studies, we talked about the word fret, talked about our English word fret and how that's probably a poor translation because of the connotations of our English word. But the word fret simply means to glow or grow warm or to blaze up in anger. And I particularly like the definition. I'll find it here in just a moment. Here's one, the verb meaning to burn, to be kindled, to glow warm, so forth, to become vexed, to be hot, furious, to burn, become angry, be kindled. Here it is by Rotherham, to burn with vexation. It occurs a number of times, in fact, in the scriptures, and it literally means to burn with anger. Involves a rage. And so we're going to examine it from that standpoint, not necessarily the English connotations that word has. And of course, we're talking about a rage of anger, and we see that the same element is presented in the New Testament with a number of Greek words, a slight variation in their meaning. But just to get the picture before us, and what a time in the political world that we live in to see some of this, with tearing things up and people angry about this or angry about that and thinking that the resulting consequence of that then is just to see how many things we can destroy because I'm angry. And that's just a poor disposition. And our character and those who trust in the Lord just has to be different from that. But let me ask you, brethren, and feel free to address this. The world that we live in, when we see characteristics of behavior, are we not influenced to behave likewise? When you see a general response to this adverse circumstance, aren't we sometimes inclined to respond in kind? Because we think that's the appropriate response. And it is not always the appropriate response. More often than not, it is not. James tells us, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God, period. How many of us who have participated in anything in particular when we were angry made the very best decisions? Most of the time, it's the poorest decisions that we could possibly make. And so the point that we're wanting to establish and the contrast in Psalms 37 is a contrast between those who are doing right when they look upon those who are doing wrong. And much like Asaph in Psalm 37, as Richard alluded to in the last study, that looked upon those who were wicked and they seemed to prosper, and here I am trying to do what's right and things are not going so well with me. And so the response often is we become angry. We become angry at those who are doing wicked things and seem to be prosperous. We become angry with God, who we want to make responsible for whatever suffering that we might be enduring. And we think, well, I'm doing right. And this was the problem that Job addressed in chapter 9. And we'll talk about that as our study progresses just a little bit. So what we want to see is that in Romans, the 12th chapter, to note a New Testament passage, the old adage that he did it to me first, and so I've got to fire back, or got to hit back, or strike back, voids the very principle that we're reading: render to no man evil for evil, take thought for things honorable in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as in you lieth, be at peace with all men. Avenge not yourselves, beloved, but give place unto the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance belongeth unto me. I will recompense, saith the Lord. But if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him to drink, for in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Now, I can see some of us maybe smiling just a little bit and saying, well, yeah, I'll treat him just as good as I know how. And then we smile with the idea that I've gained the victory. His day will come. Yeah, okay. No, that's not the proper attitude either, and God certainly does not demonstrate that kind of attitude. So what we want to note is that there is a day of judgment, and Richard very adequately pointed this out last week. There is a day of reckoning, and the unrighteous will certainly face the wrath of God, and that's what Asaph had to learn in Psalm 73, that he saw the equity when he went into the house of God. And their things were all made equal. Now, as the text tells us, you have a responsibility to do good. Rather than sinking to the level of the ungodly, you do what's right. Under all circumstances, you do what's right. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord. I find the imperative statements, multiple imperative statements in this text, impressive. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land. Feed on his faithfulness. Delight thyself. Commit thy ways. Trust also in him. You see the idea made emphatic of your responsibility in spite of what everybody else in the world is doing. You do what you know to be right, and you take pleasure in serving the Lord. Now that's the answer that needs to be set forth. So you commit to him your way. You're going to resolve in your mind to do what's right, regardless of what everybody else does. And this becomes a repetitive theme in this chapter. Those who are doing wicked things, they'll suffer consequences for that. And that's what we want to note. And God is right and just in doing that. Now, question. Does that mean when there's a passage here in this context that we're going to get to in a bit, maybe quite a little bit, but in verse 25, the writer said, I've been young and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. Does that mean that if you do the things that are right, then you're never going to want for anything? In an absolute sense? Well, a question, did the Lord have a place to lay his head? Was the Lord rich or poor? Did he have the essentials? Yes. Did he suffer? Well, yes. When you read in 2 Corinthians 11, beginning in verse 23, of the laundry list of things that the Apostle Paul suffered, does that mean because you do then right things that you're not going to have any consequence imposed upon you that are undesirable? Well, no, that's not the point. But you'll have the things that you need. And I think this is something that we need to emphasize. When Paul said, I know how to be in want and I know how to have plenty, does that mean there were times in Paul's life when things were pretty lean? Can maybe some of you, especially some of you maybe older, remember that a time when things were pretty lean?
In our growing up days, I never wanted for food, but I do remember a time when not long after Donna and I married and Beth came along, we had a new three-year-old. No, we didn't. She wasn't 3 years old when she was born. She's just a tiny little thing. But then when she began to walk, we needed some shoes. And as most of you know, little babies need good shoes to learn to walk. We didn't have the money to buy a good pair of shoes. And you say, well, you know, things are a little tight when you don't have money to buy a pair of shoes for a baby. But we had food to eat, and things were good in that respect. But what I want us to note is this writer makes it emphatic that the blessings of God are upon those who serve Him. That doesn't mean you're not going to have any adversity. But overall, you're going to have the things that you need. And that then is what's promised, and you do good, and you wait patiently on Him. Now, again, this emphatic statement, imperative statement, in verse 7, he said, rest in Jehovah and wait patiently for Him. Is that always easy?
If it was easy, I don't think He'd be telling us all about it.
Don't just come natural, does it? It takes some development, and I suppose one of the most emphatic passages, in, at least in my mind, that's encouraging to me, is found in Isaiah chapter 40, where the writer is giving instruction to those to wait on the Lord. And you'll see that in Isaiah chapter 40, beginning in verse 27. Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from Jehovah, and justice due to me is passed away from my God? Now look at their question. How is it that you say that God is not just? How do you say that? He said, hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard? The everlasting God, Jehovah, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary. There is no searching of his understanding. He giveth power to the faint, and to him that hath no might, he increaseth strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young man shall utterly fall. But they that wait for Jehovah shall be renewed with shall renew their strength, and they shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Now, I guess my question to you at this point is, you believe that? We believe what that says. But you see, the problem was that Israel really didn't believe that. Their questions was, because we're suffering some adversity here, where's the Lord? And He's where He's always been. Wasn't that Job's problem? Because I'm suffering some adversity, where is the Lord? And wasn't that Asaph's problem? I'm suffering adversity, and so I'm trying to serve the Lord, but where's the Lord in my life? Now, maybe you've talked with people. I have, and it's quite disquieting to talk with people who are members of the Lord's church, and things are not going well in their life, and they blame God. Where's the Lord in this equation? What's God ever done for me? You ever have somebody ask you that? What's God ever done for me? Well, you see, here's the backdrop against which we find Psalm 37. And God hasn't forsaken you. He just hasn't. And when you look at those who are wicked and you say, well, they're doing pretty good, and here I am, I'm not doing so good, and I'm trying to serve the Lord, and that makes me mad. And so that's what Psalm 37 is all about. So what do you do? Who do you fuss at? Who do you need to fuss at?
Yourself.
Yourself? Yeah. Because you see, you're forgetting something. You're forgetting that God has made some promises and He's not going to back up on those things. So God will bring forth your righteousness, and the problem then is you. The problem is me, as we need to let Him do that. Fed or be fed on His faithfulness. Don't become angry because the wicked seems to prosper. Jesus had stated it a number of times in the Sermon on the Mount that those hypocrites among the Jews who were seeking the reward of men, they have what they're seeking. And if that's all that they're seeking, then they'll get what's due unto them. But in verse 4 of the text, it says, delight thyself also in Jehovah, and He will give thee the desires of thy heart. You're not going to want for the things that are necessities in your life. Now, here's where I want to spend some time. And again, thanks to Richard for covering very well these previous verses, but it's necessary to use that as a stepping stone to get to verse 8. He said, cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself, it tendeth only to evil doing. And then the transition, verse 9, has to do with the consequences upon the evildoer. Now, we noted James chapter 1, verse 20, a few moments ago. I want to note it again, and I also want to note in James 3, verse 16, because this becomes somewhat of a repetitive theme in the book of James. In James 1, if you'll back up with me, please, to verse 2, a passage that, frankly, I find to be very difficult in its application. It's not difficult to understand, but its application is difficult. Let me ask you, when you look at our text of Psalm 37, verse 8, cease from anger and forsake wrath, fret not thyself. In other words, don't become inflamed when you look at evildoers. Is that an easy task? Well, when you see somebody doing things that are just wrong, doesn't that just inflame you all over? Let me illustrate. And we could cite example after example after example of this. My truck was parked out here in the parking lot. Some of you remember, Wednesday night. Somebody just got into the back end of it and took my toolbox. Well, it was my toolbox. It wasn't valuable, I mean, in terms of a lot of money, because it was just odds and ends tools that I thought I might need if I was out on the road somewhere. But does that infuriate you when you find something like that to happen? I know my truck was parked out in front of my house. I went in to get something and came out, and I caught a young lady trying to steal my truck. She's trying to jockey the steering column to start my truck. Does that irritate you when you catch somebody doing something like that? And then not long after that, somebody got into the cab of the truck and stole some stuff out of it and had them on video doing it. And you say, well, nothing ever going to happen. The folks would take all the information down to the sheriff's department, and they say, yeah, I got the picture, got all the evidence here. But they're juveniles, and the very worst that's ever going to happen to them is basically nothing. Somebody throw a brick through the window. If you had a video of them, what are they going to do about it? Does that infuriate you? And it does me. But now, question, should we become so infuriated by those kind of things that we say, well, there's no point in serving the Lord because look at all these bad things that happened to me? Well, no, we can't do that. We can't do that because when we allow ourselves to become so infuriated, then we make bad judgments, don't we? And in James 1, verse 2 and 3, he says, count it all joy, my brethren, when you fall into manifold temptations, knowing that the proving of your faith worketh patience, and let patience have its perfect work, that it may be perfect and entire, lacking in nothing. Now here's the application. Count it all joy when you fall into manifold temptations. When we talk about temptation, name a few. What are some temptations?
There's a lot.
Greed.
Greed. All right. You got greed out.
Black Friday.
All right. All right. Yeah, we all want to buy something for nothing, don't we? So greed, that becomes a temptation. Name another one.
Lust.
All right. We think of the moral elements involved in all of that. All right. So we've got temptation. All right. The things that we see sometimes relate to money. We think about sexual things or the passions of the flesh. These are temptations. All right. So count it all joy when you just think about the bottom dollar down here. I want to get that electronic device, and I want them to pay me to take it. All right. All right, so I'm tempted. All right. And here's a circumstance where morally here's somebody else's wife, and I've got an opportunity to be with her, and so I'm tempted. Count it all joy when you fall into those kind of things. Well, I'm not so sure that's exactly the circumstance here that we're trying to describe. Because in the things that we're trying to describe is, in this context of Psalm 37, is when I'm tempted to be in a rage of anger at somebody when I feel that that's justified. Now, what's the difference in these other things that you've talked about, greed and lust and this irritability that I'm trying to conquer? Is there any difference at all?
Greed and lust are sort of outward things that you have to act on, but being irritable or angry, that's something inside ourselves that we have to control our thoughts.
It kind of goes on in here, and I burn, and I become incensed with something that I feel is unjust, it's not right, and so I'm going to then act upon that premise. But you see where I've got the squelch, that's up here. Now, bottom line, greed's the same way. It's got to be squelched up here. Bottom line, lust, that's got to be squelched up here. But somehow in our minds, we make a separation of that. Here's something that's on the outside, and here's something that's on the inside. Fact is, it's all on the inside. But we see that more clearly when it comes to this element of fretting. And we'll use the term rage and anger because I think that it's more accurate in the description of what's going on here. Now, in James 1, or he says, count it all joy when you fall into these things. Why? Because I'm learning to be patient through these kind of things. And I would dare say that sometimes our feelings about things is where the biggest battles are fought. And I've got to learn that. Now, in the first chapter in verse 20, he said, verse 19, but you know this, my beloved brethren, but let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Wrath of man doesn't do that. Well, here's what we're talking about. You see the same thing in James, the third chapter. And in verse 16, he said, for where jealousy and faction are, there is confusion in every vile deed. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, easy, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits without variance, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace for them that make peace. Well, that's kind of where the rub comes, doesn't it? Because when I look at the way the world thinks, anger is a natural reaction to something that makes me unhappy. Randy?
Going back to the first part of James, verse 2 doesn't stand alone.
No, it does not.
It's part of a context. You know, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, is what the New American Standard says. It's the marginal reference says, or temptations. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And then there's a but. Verse 5, but if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously without reproach, and it will be given to him. The idea is that wisdom is the other end of the spectrum from anger. And if we're going to, if we consider it all joy, that doesn't mean we're happy about it. We're not happy that we're being tempted. But the joy comes from knowing where it leads.
Yeah.
The testing of our faith produces endurance, and endurance has a perfect result that we may be perfect and complete. And if we're having trouble finding that joy, then we pray for wisdom.
Yeah.
Because wisdom is what gives us that joy.
Yeah, it might be a good idea to pray for wisdom from the get-go. Because there is a wisdom that's not of this world. And we see that in the third chapter that ties these thoughts together. Very good. Very good point. Now, taking this back to our text, what does the Bible say about anger? You know, when we talk about Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, even the Song of Solomon, we group these together and call them wisdom literature, right? Wisdom literature. You want to learn to make good choices. And we know what a proverb is. It is a general, wise truth or saying. Okay? That's what a proverb is. And would not we do well to listen to general, wise truths, whether it's stated in the Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, or even in the Song of Solomon? Let's look at just a few. Proverbs 14, verse 17. He that is soon angry will deal foolishly. And the man of wicked devices is hated. A man that is soon angry will deal foolishly. Let me ask you, brother, again, I'm not asking for a show of hands. Do you always make your best choices when you're mad? Do you generally mess up when anger rules? Generally, you do. And that's what the wisdom writer said. Now, if you know that going in, what do you do about that?
Don't
do that. You do it, yeah. If you know that going in, that if I allow myself to become so stirred up, I'm going to mess up. I'm going to commit sin. I'm going to behave foolishly. Now, who has control of that? You do, yeah. In Proverbs 16:32, he that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. You ever talk to somebody that allowed themselves to get so angry they did something so very foolish, and then their explanation of it was, well, I couldn't help it? How many of you have heard that? Well, I just couldn't help Well, everybody's heard that. And probably most of us have said that. I just couldn't help it. Well, now that's just ignorance gone to seed. Yeah, you can help it. Because who has control of your anger? Who best have control of it? Well, that'd be you. You've got to control that thing. You've just got to. You've got to control that thing. Because the consequences are bad. The wisdom writer again says, the discretion of a man maketh him slow to anger. And it is his glory to pass over a transgression. Now let that hit bottom. The wise man, he's slow to anger. And sometimes the best thing he can do is just overlook something. Choose your battles. We got to be angry over everything. Everything that I don't like, everything that I choose to be an inequity to me, it makes me mad. And so I've got to vent because I'm angry. No, that's words of a fool. Again, the wisdom writer, Proverbs 22:24, make no friendship with a man that is given to anger, and with a wrathful man thou shalt not go. And why? You choose your best companions from those that are quick to get angry. They just fire over everything. Why do you not want to do that? You know the answer.
You're going to follow along.
All right. Yeah, you'll follow along. 1 Corinthians 15, what is it, 33? Says, evil companions corrupt good morals. You choose your best friends from folks that are quick to fire, then you'll learn to be quick to fire. All right. Now, let me ask you another question on this. I know that people have different personalities. I'm not so blind that I don't know that or don't see that. You think the Lord knew that? That people have different personalities. Why, even critters have different personalities. If you've been around dogs or cats or horses or cows or mules, sometimes they just have different personalities. And that's just the way of it. But now, if you come across a critter that has a personality that needs to be changed, you need to learn how to change that, don't you? And see, what we're talking about is changing your personality. Changing your personality. Yes, there are those who are quick to fire. My brother and I, we've talked about this frequently. My brother and I, when we were growing up, he was one that would get mad over everything. Just that quick, he was mad. And just fighting mad. But then 30 minutes from now, it's all done and over. You know anybody like that? Yeah? But now we all are acquainted with another kind of anger too, right? And that's the fellow that don't get mad very quick. But when he is mad, he could hurt somebody because he sees. Now, is one worse than the other? Well, both are wrong. You see, there may be different consequences, but both are wrong.
One thing I find when I get angry, I've noticed it lately, that I have to pray to get through it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the Satan's there with the anger trying to get me mad. And I know it's not right.
Yeah.
But that's hard.
It is hard. One of the things, I'm glad you brought that up, Claire. One of the things I learned a long time ago from an older preacher, he said sometimes he got called into a circumstance where two brethren were upset with each other. Something's happened. Somebody's angry. And he said, I'll sit down and meet with them and call on one that seems to be the angriest to lead us together in prayer. Now, why would he do that? Calms the situation, yeah? And it's kind of hard just to keep on being mad when you just talk with the Lord about this and ask for His blessings to resolve this thing. And you're going to keep on being so stirred and angry when you just ask for the Lord's help to get through this. Well, there's an old man that had some wisdom about him. Exactly. So we see what the wisdom writer had. And just on and on. A fool uttereth all his anger, but a wise man keepeth it back and stilleth it. Now I want you to look at that one especially so. Have somebody tell me one time that you as well to say it as to think it. Well, what does the Bible call a man that just well to say it as to think it? A fool. Now there you are. Now when sometimes these thoughts are stirred, what's the best thing I can do with it?
Bite your tongue.
Bite your tongue. That's right. You squelch it. You keep it back and stilleth it. I get annoyed sometimes with folks that think that that's somehow going to warp your personality and warp the personality of children as they grow up. Yeah, we need to vent. Well, if you need to vent, my dad had an answer to that. He'd give us a double bit chopping axe and a cross cut saw and we'd go cut post. For fencing. Now, if you're so angry that you've got to do something, then take it out on that tree. go make it productive, cut down a tree. Well, you see, the idea is you've got to learn what works for you to get over that. You can't keep going down that path. You can't do it. You've got to learn to quiet that down. An angry man stirreth up strife. A wrathful man aboundeth in transgression. How much clearer does language need to be? When you allow anger to rule, you're going to make some very bad choices. And there's going to be consequence. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 9, be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Now, you would think that this would be something that would be a common occurrence in the lives of people because it's stated so many times.
I'm still over in Proverbs 29. The fool always loses his temper, but a wise man holds it back. I think it's important to know that being angry is not a sin.
No, we'll talk about that. No.
Being out of control is a sin.
Yeah.
And when it says a wise man holds it back, you hold back your temper.
Yeah.
Means you don't display it.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some things that need to make us angry. And I think we see evidence that Jesus was angry on occasion. God becomes angry on occasion. But the question is why, and what do you do with it when you are?
And whether it's out of control.
Yes. Yes. All those are valid questions.
I've heard people talk about when something occurs, do you react or do you respond? And react is the, hair trigger temper, fly off the handle, lash out type of thing. Respond is, you might be clenching your fist and mentally counting to 10, but you're biting your tongue and giving that moment before anything comes out of your mouth or off of your fist or anything like that.
Trying to bring it under control. Yeah, exactly. Well, let me ask you, brethren, when we look at the text of James 1, 3, 2, and 3, count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials. What we're doing is trying to learn from this experience some lessons that are going to be helpful to me when I cross this bridge again, and I will come this way again. So what have I learned? Let me suggest something to you. In light of what the writer is discussing in the psalm, and I don't want to just overbeat up this passage, but the writer is talking about anger and what anger can do to us. And the thing in this context is when I see somebody doing wrong things, and that makes me mad. And then maybe I blame God, or I vent to somebody else, and I hurt somebody else because I'm angry. Well, I've got to learn to draw some lines, Carolyn, as you pointed out. Does it take for me to control this? Maybe I need a double-bit axe to go chop down a fence post. Maybe I need a cross-cut saw. Maybe I need to run a few miles. Maybe I need to stop and count to 10. Maybe I just need to sit down and clench my fist and get through it. But look, if you will, in Ephesians chapter 4. I don't know if I have that on the board. Yeah, right there. Ephesians chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, and let's talk about it. It says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and railing be put away from you with all malice, and be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, even as God also in Christ forgave you. I use this illustration so many times, I guess, when I talk about these things, because as previously serving as an elder, Chris and Terry and I, we'd be called into a situation where we're dealing with a married couple that's having difficulty. And as a gospel preacher, I don't like this, but nonetheless, sometimes as a gospel preacher, you get called into a situation where some couple is having trouble and they want some help. And sometimes I've made the mistake by going into a circumstance like that and simply asking the question, so what's the problem? And oh my, then one or the other begins to light in telling me what the problem is, and then not too long I see what the problem is, because it's the fight is on. And so here we go. And I asked a middle-aged couple one time about this passage. We turned to it and read it, and I said, let all bitterness and wrath and clamor, and anger and clamor and railing be put away from you with all malice. I said, do you ever find that something comes up that you have a disagreement about, and before long the agitation turns into we're raising our voices, and before long then we're just yelling and screaming at each other and nobody is listening. And the husband in the family said, yeah, we do that all the time. Now, here's my question. What is clamor? We don't use that word every day. And I think it's unfortunate in many respects that it's translated clamor here because we're not so familiar with that word. But what does it mean?
Noise and confusion.
Yeah, noise and confusion. Yelling and screaming at each other. That's what clamor is. Now, what did the writer say to do with that? Put it away. Now, this fellow and his wife is sitting in front of me and asked the question, well, what's wrong? And here the fight is on. And I said, do you find yourself, it turns into just a yelling match? Oh, yeah, we do that all the time. Well, what's he acknowledging? What do they do all the time? They sin. They're committing sin.
I heard the saying, like if somebody does you wrong, I said it's okay to forgive but not forget.
Well, that's kind of another subject, and I'll address it just briefly. The idea of forgiveness is I don't hold that against you anymore. Now, I know, and we've had this discussion, and I know I have on a personal level with people, that God has the ability to forget, okay? He'll blot it out of His book of remembrance. All right, we get that. I would suggest to you that God has an ability that I don't have. It's difficult for me to just blot it out of my book of remembrance. I can't even remember it. But the element of it doesn't make a difference in our relationship. That has to be present. It doesn't make a difference. It's forgiven. It's in the past. I can't let that govern the way that I treat you from now on. Can't do that.
On that comment, what I do is forgiveness is the bridge. Forgetting is underneath the bridge.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, that's a good way to illustrate. Yeah, I would go with that. That's a good deal. And so what we've got to do with this is to be kind, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, even as God also in Christ forgave us. Now, I sometimes make the point, especially when I'm discussing these matters with married people that are having difficulty. Somebody said, preacher, you don't know how hard that is. You just don't know how hard that is to forgive this person of what they've done. And my response to that is you won't ever be called upon to forgive anyone else of anything any greater than what you yourself have called upon God to forgive you of. Yes?
I think sometimes we don't recognize that our lack of forgiveness is the rage,
yeah,
the anger that,
yeah,
we haven't addressed.
That's right.
You can be have a horrific experience that has enraged you to the point where sometimes you can't see straight.
Yeah.
And when that person or that memory of that situation arises again, if you feel that same rage and anger, that wrath, you haven't forgiven.
No.
And that's a heavy weight to carry around.
It is a heavy weight, and I'm glad you expressed it that way, because that's what the writer is saying in this passage. Look again back at Psalm 37, verses 8, and let's go on into verse 9 for this point. He says, cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself. It tendeth only to evil doing. For evil doers shall be cut off, but those that wait for Jehovah shall inherit the land. Now, if I become in a rage because of this evil doer over here, he's either done something to me or I see some inequity in life and I feel that I've been shortchanged, and so consequently I am so enraged by that I don't behave properly either toward him or toward God. Now, who have I become? I've become one of them. I've become the evil doer. Yeah, I'm as bad as he is. And that's kind of a hard concept to wrap your mind around. But that's the point, you see. We must Put all this away. Ephesians 4, Colossians 3. Be slow to wrath, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Now, I have James 1 on the board again for a reason. I want to go back to that, if you would, please. There's a statement at the first part of James 1:19 that I think sometimes we overlook. We emphasize, but let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, and then talk about wrath in verse 20. But look at that expression in the first part of verse 19. Ye know this, my beloved brethren. What's he telling them?
You already are aware of this.
Already told you.
Yeah.
Who's James writing to?
12 tribes who were dispersed abroad.
All right. Elaborate.
Jews.
He's writing to Jews. That's right. Who've become Christians. He's writing to Jews who've become Christians. Now, when James says, you know this, some expositors say that it's more of a exclamatory notation, an exclamation, if you please. Know this. I prefer the thought that's expressed in at least the American Standard Translation. You know this. And why would they know this?
But in the Old Testament.
Look at how many times it's stated in the Old Testament. They should be familiar with this. So you know this already. Now granted, if you put the exclamation mark there and say, know this, well, you've got it, yes. But addressed to these people, why would they not know it? Yes, you know this. It's familiar territory. You've experienced this before. You've read all of this. And so what we need to note then is the sin of anger. This disposition is literally that. It is a sin. It does not produce good. We can and we must put it away. We can and we must repent when that flares in our mind. And so we refuse anger when it begins. Now, Carolyn, you mentioned something a moment ago. How do you do that? You and Claire both. How do you do that?
Well, prayer, and then in that moment, you might need some. I find when talking to kids who, you know, are in various different states, while they're talking, I'm listening, but I'm also trying to slow down my breathing and you know, put my hands in my pockets or something to just bring myself down to where I can respond appropriately and not blow up.
Beth and Donna have noticed that I am not quite like my brother to just fire like that. 30 minutes later, it's over. I'm one that sees. And it's hard for me to get over. I don't like to get angry. For that reason, it's more difficult for me to get past that. And Donna and Beth in particular have noticed that when something occurs that really stirs me, I kind of bite my teeth. Muscles up here begin to clench, and I breathe a little heavy and don't say much for a little while, and I'm trying to work this through to behave in an appropriate manner. But you're right. Sometimes you've got to get your mind where it needs to be. Think on the right things. Bring your mind to where it needs to be before you say or do something. So it becomes up here, a heart problem. For as he thinketh within himself, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So here's the problem. So what do we do about it? Ask the question, what is it that's made me angry? Why am I so upset about this? Well, let's look at some illustrations. Well, first of all, Proverbs 29, as you were reading, he that is upright in the ways is an abomination to the wicked. Well, sometimes the fellow that's doing right things makes the wicked man angry, makes him angry, because he sees the righteous fellow doing what's right. Isn't that the case with Cain? Why was Cain angry? Well, he was envious of his brother, and John just says that. He killed his brother because he envied him. He saw the righteousness of his brother. Saul repeatedly tried to kill David. And why? He acknowledged that David is more righteous than I. And when he saw the righteousness of David, it made him so angry that he wanted to kill David. And Haman, he wanted to just wipe out the whole nation of the Jews. And why? Because he looked at Mordecai over here that was a good man, and Mordecai wouldn't bow down and worship him. Wouldn't give him the praise that he sought. And it made him so angry that he wanted to kill a nation of people. You see, in the people of Jesus' day, when they looked at Jesus, what did they see? What was Jesus doing? What did Peter tell them? You saw
miracles.
You saw miracles. Well, what did he do? He healed blind people. People that were sick, he made them well. People that were lame, he made them to walk. He even raised people from the dead. And what effect did that have on the Jews?
They killed him.
And what did Pilate observe? Why was Jesus even delivered to be crucified?
And jealousy.
Jealousy, envy, hatred. Because the things that Jesus was doing was gaining for him popularity among the Jews, and the leaders of the Jews despised him for it. They wanted to kill him. And so when Stephen stood before them and just told them straight out that you have become betrayers and murderers of the righteous one, what did they do to him? They killed him too. So what I want us to see is that even in the Sermon on the Mount, when the Lord said, don't be angry, he's not saying that sometimes we aren't justified maybe in being angry, but he's saying you've got to rein that thing in, because a loud, free course, what does it always do? It leads to sin, even to taking of a life. You've got to rein that thing in. All right, so why are you angry? Cain said, my punishment's greater than I can bear. Saul suffered death in battle against the Philistines because of what he did. And Haman was hanged on his own gallows, and those who crucified the righteous one, what happened to them? Well, those that did not repent, they would face unquenchable fire because of what they did. And I have Hosea up here for the purpose of noting that they sowed to the wind and they reaped the whirlwind. What they got was a whole lot worse than what they wanted. And we'll stop with that and address this some more. I realize that I'm varying just a little bit from the context of Psalm 37, but I think it's important that we deal with this attribute because of how dangerous it can be to us. All right, thank you for your attention.